Was Malawi what you expected?
Not at all. No. Malawi is the poorest country in Africa. Their annual GDP is less than $300 a year. And so while I was anticipating that the culture would be different, I had no idea about the level of poverty. And so I had never quite experienced that, you know, subsistence sort of experience that was way beyond what I had ever anticipated. So in addition to really the cultural part, I think the eyes, the sights, the sounds, the children and the individuals we met, the one thing about Malawi, it's called the warm heart of Africa because the people are very, very, very open, accepting, and kind, and they love Americans, and they're a very peaceful country, haven't had any civil unrest. And so from that aspect, you know, we felt, you know, very safe and very welcome. But the type of conditions that they are experiencing, in addition to a drought and the potential of a third of their country suffering from starvation in the next year, it was a little bit overwhelming to anticipate, knowing that these are real-life human beings with hearts and souls. So it was pretty life-changing.
Can you describe, tell me what it looked like? What does a classroom look like? Do they have classrooms?
Yeah.
I don't have any experience with this. Tell me what it's like.
Yeah, they do in some places. And that's we visited a number of schools, and we visited first in the capital city of Lilongwe, and they have we visited a public school, if you want to call that, that's run by the government, and then we also visited a private that were really not much different. These were very stark stone structures that were placed, you know, in a number, you know, around sort of an area, but each building would house a classroom. And what's really striking is that there is really nothing in them. You know, it's just blank walls, little paint, desks. But I think the most overwhelming factor that we kept hearing is that class sizes are anywhere from 100 to 120 students at one time. So when you think about, you know, the facilities, and in the private one, there was electricity but no running water. But in the government one, there was, you know, no electricity and no running water. So you think about those types of conditions. Even more so to know that the children to come to the school oftentimes had to walk. You know, there's no public transportation for them to come, you know, anywhere from an hour or might be even more than an hour to get there. So those conditions alone just really are beyond what we anticipate school would be like. They have a national curriculum. They teach religion. The country is primarily Christian with a very small Muslim population of less than 15%. So religion is part of the curriculum. But the teachers that come there have such a, you know, they don't have enough textbooks for every student. Now, that's in the city. And then you go out to the country, and there's classrooms may simply be under a tree, and again, with anywhere from 100 to 120-some students to try to educate in a very simplistic way. I think what was striking is that they don't have trouble with attendance. And you think about that, where they're, you know, they're the distance they need to go, lack of resources, you know, is really beyond something that we take so for granted, and we're so worried. They're very hungry for knowledge, and yet, you know, are coming from nothing is basically what they have. So pretty interesting.
I'm thinking about, I know you say you can't compare too, but I'm thinking about all of the first day of school pictures that have popped up on social media. You know, kids are, they're showered and bathed and new clothes and shiny backpacks, and they're going to these classrooms that are colorful and bright with all of these things. And I'm trying to figure out what that looks like compared to my experience even this year.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because I was driving down the street this morning and there was two people out front. I don't know what school had not started, but they had their daughter out front, and she was holding a sign with a picture, and they were taking a picture. And it just, it's exactly what I thought of this morning, because school starts today in Malawi. They don't start until, or it was yesterday, actually. And when I'm thinking about these kids walking to school, and so just to give you an idea of, you know, there is no public transportation, and they do wear uniforms, interestingly enough, and how they afford that, it's very simple, probably one outfit that they have, and they have no school supplies, of course. They're going, you know, without anything. When we're watching as we were driving down the road, the highways are just in a horrible shape. Most people walk, and it's exactly what you would imagine. You know, they're carrying, they have to go to a well to get water, so they're carrying the water in their head. They're carrying baskets of food on their head. They're riding a bike, perhaps, with all, you know, with trying to trade things in the village. So as the children, what I can envision is them walking in groups, you know, across the country and taking whatever they have to, you know, they do have, they take their own food or whatever they do have. But coming to an area where if, you know, though they say that in some places it's 100 kids under a tree, walking into a stark building and knowing that, you know, the teacher is the head of the classroom and very little interaction, it doesn't have necessarily the same joy, and yet they're very hungry for that type of education to make that happen. I think two images that kind of describe the condition of the country, that if this just says it all to me as I'm thinking back, there's now finally compulsory education up to grade, what we would consider grade 8. They have a different name for it. And then from then on, there's nothing that's required, so a lot of times the girls don't go to school beyond that. And because they're a financial burden to their family, they're often married off very young. So to see young girls with little babies who look like they're 13, 14 years old, strapped to their back, and standing there just with their hands out looking for some help. But the striking image to me was as we were driving back from the school for the blind, were two little boys along the side of the highway who had three mice on a stick trying to sell them for food or for money. That's the type of conditions we're thinking about. And so that's just not even comparative, you know, to what we have. They have very few programs for students with special needs, and you can imagine how do you do that in a classroom of 120? In other words, special education services. But we did visit out in a long way. It was in a remote part of the country. They have a school for the blind and also for children who have special needs. And it was, it's just hard to even explain the conditions that were there, and yet these people who really cared. And so the connection with those individuals, I'm committed to continue a conversation with some of the teachers who were there who had this heart for children who are learning disabled, who actually lived there. The conditions were just poor beyond, it's just hard to even explain. But yet these people want to make a difference for these kids. We went to the induction of the 13 Peace Corps young people, and they had a huge ceremony in this village. And this village had taken these young people in for 3 months to acclimate them to the country and to the conditions, and they had lived in, you know, these homes without electricity and, you know, dirt floors and whatever, and they just loved these young people, and it was vice versa. And then they were going out the next day to go into their own schools. But anyway, there was this huge celebration for about 3 hours, speeches and dancing and, you know, drums, and just, you know, the entire village was out there, this sea of little black faces, and they were so excited to see us, and you'd take your picture with your cell phone, then they wanted to see the picture and hugs and, you know. But as we're leaving, I'm standing there, of course, we have our water bottles, and you see these little, they came up, and these little boys, it was basically boys, standing there looking at our water bottles and pointed to them. They just wanted our water bottles. So I went back to the van and got as many as we could, leaving a few, of course, because we're selfish enough to leave for ourselves for the rest of the day. But got as many as we could and started pouring water and, you know, distributing it. But that water bottle was a huge thing to those children. I will never, ever look at a water bottle the same and not remember those children.
What do you bring back to South Dakota? Clearly there's a human element, but are there education ideas or just proof that it can work that you bring back to this state?
You know, what I think really was a common conversation there that I think that we can learn from and still rally around. I'm going to step back for a second, because what was interesting is that teachers are viewed with a lot of high regard and respect. And this is something I continually hear from educators across our state and across the nation, that, you know, the honor and the respect of the profession is waning over time. And so they have the same conversations about how we make sure that our educators are receiving that. I know that we visited a number of young, well, there was 13 young people who were part of the Peace Corps who were inducted and were going to be sent out. And they, in their schools, will have the best housing, if you want to call it that, which means that they might have a cement floor in their home and may have electricity or may not. But they are regarded in that respect. So that was one takeaway, that no matter who we are, the education system there does look to the teachers as being highly regarded for the work they do, even though they are paid very, very poorly. That was something I brought back, and yet I think that when we think about how we support teachers is in a much different way than they support their teachers there, and that, you know, I taught for 23 years. I loved hugging my kids. I loved, you know, we were just, you felt that real connection with them, and there, the teacher is the teacher at the head of the class. There's not much expectation that you're going to have that emotional kind of connection, because they've never, that's not part of their culture. So when we talked about that, or the National Teacher of the Year talked about how, you know, you need to have that personal connection, it was something really foreign to them that I still think is a powerful thing here. So common factor among us, you know, the respect for the profession, and the need that we need to continue to do that here in the United States, that's number one thing that I brought back. But also that we need to make sure that we don't forget about how valuable it is that we do have those one-on-one connections with kids and making them feel like they, you know, people don't trust you until they know you. And that was a very foreign concept, I think, that we were trying to relay back to them. So those were simplistic human things, but very important things.
Those personal connections, though, I imagine with 100 to 120 students, that's not an easy thing to accomplish when we're looking at class sizes of 25 and going, how do I care for all of these students? How do I nurture them?
Yeah, and that was exactly the conversation, which I totally understand, where, you know, managing those numbers alone does not allow you to do that. And yet, as we talked to some of the young people about, you know, how it could be discouraging that you have that large, and how do you know if you made the impact? Making sure that, you know, you've got to focus on the wins of saving, you know, 1 to 10, to, you know, number of children a year that may never have had an opportunity to interact with somebody. That's where you've got to focus on. So, yeah, that was really a difference in our systems.
And how do you communicate some of the advantages or the success stories of a place like South Dakota? I mean, we're talking about how teachers in different districts might be able to collaborate more, but when we seem to have so many resources comparatively, right, how does any of that even translate?
It was very difficult to translate, and I have to be really honest about that, because it just seemed almost wrong. You know, it's not where they are in the process. A very striking difference was we went visited a teacher college, and their teachers are given only a 2-year certificate, so they don't even have a 4-year bachelor degree. So they're coming out with, you know, less education, and so their interaction, even at that point, is not at the same level as what our teachers are. It's very difficult to translate back when we start talking about, you know, the big push in South Dakota that I'm really passionate about is personalized learning, meeting kids at where they're at. When you are, when you're dealing with, I know, a huge class size, and I am not exaggerating. I mean, I didn't talk to any teacher who had less than 100 students per class. To even think about how we interact with our students here, or to think about technology, is just really beyond any sort of expectations. Or, you know, if you don't even have a textbook to take home, how do you even come down and have those interactive conversations with them? What happens in their country is that the teachers are paid by the government. There's no local school district that pays them. So that's where the issue is that the government is struggling for funds. And so when you can't, you know, if you only have X number of dollars and the pie is small, and the school gets X number of dollars, you can only hire X number of teachers. And so it really is a different conversation where the teachers don't feel empowered to be able to make any types of those decisions or to even say anything. We did interact on interest, and it was only a call, which I felt I wish we could have had a face-to-face conversation. They do have a teachers union, which I think was interesting. But their teachers union negotiates for all teachers in the country, because, again, they're paid by the government. And their concern was over the government had not adequately paid them for some services that they had done. and some teacher training. So that was an interesting side, that their union is not at the local level, has difficulty because the government negotiates for all public employees' services rather than just for the teachers' union. So, however, one other note with teachers. One of the days, there was an in-service for teachers who were invited to come. Actually, we saw two teacher in-services, but one teacher in-service, they came and they were not, you know, this was something that they weren't getting credit for. They were coming to hear the National Teacher of the Year, which she was just highly regarded, to think that she came from the U.S. What was so terribly striking, when these people walked in the room, there was probably 20 of them, you know, they came in suits and ties. The women were in heels and dresses, and just, you know, that they sat there with just rapt attention about what can we do to make things better. They're very hungry to make things better, knowing that they were going to go back out to their villages and be in those types of conditions. So very, very interesting that you can't compare the two. So, but made some really amazing connections with some of the teachers.
And then you have to come back and really take that perspective and add it in and put it into context, because we have a lot of great things going in education in South Dakota, but that doesn't mean there isn't room for improvement. A lot of the Meet the Candidates interviews that we've been doing, so many of them say we need to do more for education, we need to do more for teacher pay, but we just got off of a session that was so heavy in education during the legislature. So, I mean, how do you transition back and go, okay, we have so many things, but where can we improve, and how can we make this even better?
I think the important thing for us right now, after coming off of what we've done, and this is without in regards to even what I have currently experienced, but that will continue to impact, is that we just need to stay the course. So, you know, we're going to have an influx of new legislators, and you know, everybody comes with new ideas. My promise to the field and my message to the field has been that at this point in time, what we need to do now is just stay the course. We don't need, you know, something new does not always mean it's better. We need to continue to build on all the things that we've done over the last few years, with implementation of new standards and really honing our practice and making sure that we are, you know, becoming better at the profession itself. We have this whole new education accountability system through ESSA. I think that instead of making it out to be something brand new, that we learn from what we've done well, but continue to stay the course and not bring in something, now we're going to do something new and different. But I think the area that's going to really be exciting in South Dakota that I'm so, and this has really come from the ground up. This hasn't been something that I don't think the department can take any credit for other than supporting, is all of the work that's being done in the area of personalized learning, and where they're really meeting children at where they're at in their educational experience, and taking the best from that, and watching school districts really, you know, it's not the sage on the stage, in other words, and that's the stark difference I saw in Malawi. You know, the teacher stood at the front. Of course, everybody learns the same thing, and it's at whatever pace it's at. You have 100 kids. I know in a couple of weeks, again, we're going back and visiting some schools where they're doing some amazing things with customized learning, and I think that that's the next wave in South Dakota, that we need to support schools when they feel like they should be making the differences instead of us mandating it from the top. So I want to stay the course. I want to support. I want to give them what they need at that level without a whole lot of rules and regulations to make their lives difficult.
And in the spring, when we were talking about initiatives that really examined teacher pay, one of the things that you said over and over was, it's not the only measure, but it is a level of respecting teachers and recognizing that their time is valuable. Are we just now seeing how this shakes out with teacher pay? And is that change in pay making a difference? Do teachers you talk to say, yeah, I get it, people care?
I think you're spot on with that, because I do think what it did, it was more of a statement that we do respect the profession. The common thing I heard kind of that I brought back, we all want to be recognized and respected for the work that we do. And I think that the pay thing, There's the economic side of it, but there's also the humanistic side of just recognizing that teachers, you know, are the foundation of where all of us came from in life to form who we are today and in that way. So I continue to hear from teachers that, you know, yes, I'm going to stay because, you know, there was more pay, but I do think they feel valued. I think that, but to value them, we got to make sure, again, that we're listening to them and taking from them where we should be going next instead of, oh, we should talk to the teachers about this. That's another piece I brought back, that we need to include them in the conversations as we're moving forward. So I think it made a huge difference. Could not be more proud of what we were able to accomplish last year with the support of the governor and the legislature, but you are spot on. I mean, I think it's a bigger conversation about the honoring of the profession. That's what we heard loud and clear, and that's for all of us, I think.